From the crossroads of America in the Hoosier state of Indiana, this is Get In, the podcast focused on the unfolding stories and extraordinary innovations happening right now in the Heartland. I'm Matt Hunkler, the host for today's conversation, and this episode is a live recording from a Powder Keg Executive Summit, where I was joined by co-host Toph Day, CEO at Elevate Ventures. You're about to hear a very special conversation about creativity, vulnerability, and play at work. We're joined on stage by two of my very best friends and musical collaborators, Max Yoder and Jeb Banner, who also happen to be remarkable leaders and entrepreneurs in the Powder Keg community. Max Yoder was the CEO and co-founder of Lessonly, a learning management software acquired in 2021 by Seismic, a global leader of sales enablement.
Distinguishing between scary and dangerous is very difficult, but if we can do more of it, we can figure out the things that we can tinker around and the scary stuff, right? You know, and some things are dangerous, but not scary. If I smoke a cigarette, that is probably dangerous, but in the moment, not scary. You get the idea, though. There's things that we can do that are actually dangerous that don't trigger our scare, you know, and those things are really dangerous. And one of the things that I would say is staying in a job that is not life-giving. It's dangerous, but it's not scary.
Max is also the author of a couple of powerful books, Do Better Work and also To See It, Be It. Max loves to share his ideas on better work, wholeness, compassion, and leadership. And this makes him a great guest to help us learn about creativity and play in the workplace. Jeb Banner is our other guest in today's conversation, and he is currently the CEO at OpenDate, a live music automation platform that helps venues manage calendars, ticketing, artist discovery, and more.
Part of the problem is with business is that we're so focused on efficiencies. Creativity is inefficient by nature. It is wasteful by nature. And yet, that is where the good stuff comes from. So building a culture where you have process and refinement and focus, and you have creative inefficiency is very difficult to do, and especially doing that in a remote culture, I would say. And it's something that a code that I have been trying to crack for a long time. And I don't know the answer to it. I just want to keep talking about it because to me, it's the thing that I'm trying to accomplish, you know, as an entrepreneur, to create these states of creativity and success, you know, lots of messiness and success.
Before OpenDate, Jeb was most recently CEO and co-founder of Boardable, a board management software company. He has also been a founder and investor in several other companies and nonprofits, including Smallbox, a brand experience company, The Speakeasy, the first co-working space in Indianapolis, and Musical Family Tree, an online archive of Indiana music. In this episode, you're going to learn about the transformative power of tinkering and play in any business, how to navigate judgment and criticism while embracing vulnerability at work, and a ton of actionable takeaways on creativity, risk, and finding your flow. If you are an entrepreneur or a leader building an innovation-driven company, I would love to include you in an upcoming executive summit like the one where we recorded the conversation that you're about to hear. So to learn more, send an email to our head of community, Nate Spangle, who is just nate@powderkeg.com. That's nate@powderkeg, all one word, .com. And now let's talk with Max and Jeb.
I thought this would be a really interesting conversation because we could talk about creativity, collaboration, improvisation, something that the three of us now probably have a couple hundred hours doing together outside of chatting about business. And I wanted to just dive right in and talk about those topics. I was wondering if you could just give a little bit of background on your experience with music, because most people, I think, know you from your business endeavors here in Indiana. And if you don't mind just sharing really quick, a little bit of your own background, Jeb.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. So I've been a musician since I was 12, 13 years old, just fell in love with music and had to figure out how to make it. I really wanted to learn music to make music, not to learn anyone else's songs. Still don't know how to really play anyone else's songs. And got into recording, and then recording really opened a whole nother world for me. And my love is recording. I love recording. And that's something that we love to do together. And I discovered in college the power and just the experience, the transcendent experience, in my opinion, of playing live with other people in a free form, improvisational way, beyond song structures. And that's a lot of what we've started doing together over the last few years. Well, Matt and I, going back a long, long time, with Max the last 4 or 5 years. And it's just, it's hard to explain, if you haven't experienced it, but it is similar to different states of consciousness you get into with meditation, and other things like that. I've keep on asking myself the question of how do I bring this into my working life more so? And I think that's part of what we're trying to sort of pull on right now is how do we create these flow states, these creative flow states in other environments, you know? So I love music. I love playing with other people. I love playing with these guys and excited to talk about this stuff.
Me too. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Pleasure to be here. Good to see everyone. The reason I'm interested in this conversation is I think we have this tremendous perfectionism that stops our souls from, I'll speak for myself, I had a tremendous perfectionism that stopped my soul from experimenting. And I think the antithesis of perfectionism is experimentation. It's tinkering. And music is a space where tinkering is highly rewarded because what I'm doing when I'm tinkering is playing. And I don't mean playing like playing my guitar. I can be playing my guitar and not tinkering. I can be very perfectionistic while I'm playing my guitar. But if I'm freer when I'm playing my instrument, I'm just trying different things and seeing how they feel to me, similar to how a little kid does. I have a 3-year-old daughter, and she is an excellent tinkerer. It's built into all of our DNAs from the earliest ages to tinker. Stack something, see what happens. Not because I ever want to tell anybody about the stacking I'm doing right now. My daughter's not like, I got to report on this to, you know, my Instagram following. She's like, I'm just enjoying the thing that I'm doing right in front of me, and I'm trying different stuff. And when it works, fun. When it doesn't work, fun. You know, I'm learning something. It fell down. Why did it fall down? So what I love about the space that music creativity puts me in is I'm so much more likely to tinker, and I'm so much more likely to take some of the lessons from tinkering back to work and be more experimental as a result. Because I realize when I'm tinkering, I find things I would not have found if I was not willing to explore things that don't work. And I just don't think we have a lot of patience for folks doing things that don't work. And I think we don't give ourselves a lot of patience for doing these things that don't work. And I think that is to our own detriment and to our own lack of, you know, life. And I'd like more life in the world. I think it's really life-giving to just be able to be like, it doesn't matter that it didn't work because a day of effort taught me something. You know, whether it was the thing I wanted to learn or the thing I had to learn, it taught me something. So I'm looking forward to this.
Me too. And I'll speak from experience because I think, Jeb, you're the one who really taught me how to jam. I used to play music, you know, growing up as a kid, but it was always kind of like, what's the chord progression? Like, what are we going to do? And when I started playing music with you, you were just like, let's just start playing our instruments. And I'm not an accomplished musician. So I was like, what do you mean? Let's just play our instruments. So I did a lot of falling down. And you're gracious enough to let me fall down a lot in learning that. And since then, it's just become this like really cool flow state. And Toph and I have talked a little bit about this because I've shared some of our jams with him. And Toph is actually a musician as well.
Well, I was just going to say I'm a little hurt. I haven't been invited to your parties yet. I played the trumpet in the sixth grade. So I can play taps on the bugle. Creativity is what we're talking about tonight, right? So a lot of people talk about kind of two of the, if you really just boil it down to into entrepreneurship teams, a lot of people talk about grit and creativity. And so we're hitting creativity tonight. In Sangram Bhadre, maybe have heard of him. He wrote a book about go-to-market as a product, right? Across all the disciplines, a product's just one of those disciplines. I've noticed it seems like there's a lot of product people, though, specifically that have music backgrounds. Why do you think that is?
A lot of entrepreneurs have music backgrounds. My experience, I think, musicians are entrepreneurs. I mean, like in bands, you know, you're marketing, you're leading, you're following, you're having conflict, you're failing constantly, you're going on stage and it's going poorly. You're going on stage, it's going great. You're learning all these lessons constantly, very similar to running a startup. And so, you know, in my opinion, the people that have been through that journey often are more willing to just kind of keep moving when something goes badly. And it's hard to get used to failure. It is. I mean, we're not like perfectionism. We're not raised in a society where everybody's sitting around going, hey, you know, you fell down. And I think that one of the things I love about playing music is it's a free space, when done correctly, where you can explore explore with others, and there's no judgment. There's judgment later, and I think that that's the thing. You know, there's a time of creation, and then there's a time of editing and discernment, right? And it's separating those two times. You know, you've got different mindsets. We talked about this a little earlier. And if you get into that judgment mindset while you're creating, that creation is stifled. And part of the problem is with business is that we're so focused on efficiencies. Creativity is inefficient by nature. It is wasteful by nature. And yet that is where the good stuff comes from. So building a culture where you have process and refinement and focus and you have creative inefficiency is very difficult to do. And especially doing that in a remote culture, I would say. And it's something that a code that I have been trying to crack for a long time. And I don't know the answer to it. I just want to keep talking about it because to me, it's the thing that I'm trying to accomplish, you know, as an entrepreneur, to create these states of creativity and success, you know, lots of messiness and success.
One of the things I feel really grateful for is your passion for recording, because out of our hundreds of hours of jams, you captured a couple good hours of jams. And so I edited together a little like 90-second video that has some of the energy of our jams and one of our jams that you happen to capture. So I wanted to share that with you all this evening, just so you have an idea of what we're talking about here.
I think what really builds a creative space is mentorship and apprenticeship. And I would be an apprentice in this situation. And the mentors would be, you know, Jeb and Vess, who have been making music a lot longer than me with a lot more fidelity and clarity than I have. And the way that they show up to the space is in a very accepting way to no matter who is there. If somebody is interested in playing guitar and Jeb and Vess are around and that person doesn't play guitar a whole lot, either of them could play that guitar part with more fidelity and clarity, but it's not really about that. It is about this person having an experience of being able to pick up the guitar with other people and feel loved and trusted to do what they do. And I've seen it again and again where somebody given that encouragement in that space, even if they don't have a lot of practice, opens up in a different way and they'd never forget it. They call their spouse the next day and they go, "I can't tell you what happened last night because it's beyond words, but it was, I felt loved by other people and I felt accepted by other people. And now I just want to keep playing more." And so just having the space to have two people who are mentoring, you know, Matt and I and many other people and setting a tone. If Jeb and Vess show up and they're like, "Hey, get this shit right or don't come back," I'm not coming back because I don't get it right very often. Somebody asked me one time, "Hey, have you ever been at a jam where somebody like wasn't really flowing with the jam?" And I was like, "Oh, yes, me."
Yes. Every jam.
Yes. I have been at many times in a jam where I've been overthinking something and I get invited back because it is really just about us being together. But because I feel accepted in those moments of it not working out, I'm much more likely to show up the next time with a little more practice and a little more like, all right, this time I don't want to do what I did last time. But either way, I'll feel loved. And I think the word love in business just gets so mixed up. I think people hear love in business and they think coddling. But if I consistently showed up and kept hitting the same wrong notes, I think Jed would pull me aside and go like, hey, I think you need to practice more. But if I show up and hit the wrong notes and then I show up hit different wrong notes the next time, they roll with me and they give me the space to grow. And I think that mentorship is huge.
I kind of want to, let's use a tech term, double click.
Yeah.
It's one of my, my most hated terms. I don't really hate it. It's just funny. On love, double click on love.
That's our next song.
It's a song.
That's our next song for sure.
That's definitely a startup song.
Yeah.
That's another story. But I think that in my experience, it's this weird third rail in business. Nobody talks about.
Yeah.
And yet it's the most powerful energy and power that we have in our lives in the world. And when you think about what makes something really special, it's usually something to do with friendship. It's usually to do with something where you feel connected to other people and you're feeling this bond. And if you think about like what some of the great businesses of the world are built from, they're built from friendships. And those friendships are built on love. And yet we tend to look at business and try to think about it through systems and processes and everything else, when really, if you ignore the love side of business, and I'm not talking about romantic love, I'm talking about human love for your fellow human heart energy, you're really missing out. And I think leaders that withhold their love from their people are also taking away an energy source that can greatly grow that business. And I wish there was more conversation about that, because in the creative experience, what I'm experiencing is love. You know, when we're playing together, it's coming through electric guitars and amplifiers, but it's still love. And I love to be in that space, and I want to bring others into that space. It doesn't mean there isn't critique at times. It doesn't mean that there isn't a decision later to say, you know what, that one wasn't as good as this one. Or you know what? I think that maybe you should not play the trumpet. You know,
right?
Okay, the bugle.
He's not talking to you, Tov.
Why don't you try the keyboards? So I just want to point that out, because I feel like there's so much emphasis on all these other things.
Yeah.
But underneath all that, that is such an important part of growing a vibrant, healthy business.
Amen.
Is there a moment that you saw with one of the teams that you were working in, you know, working with from the business side, where you saw the yes and versus the but mentality manifest itself from the GM sessions into the conference room or the brainstorming session?
Yeah.
That you could draw an analogy with or an example of?
Yeah. When I see that happening, there is a lack of identification with the outcome. So when I see people getting tightest and more critical, they believe that the outcome represents them. And if that outcome is not them good enough, then they are not good enough. And when they're flowing and they're more creative and open and sharing different ideas that may or may not take, right, which is a part of tinkering. Tinkering, you know, to define it would be, let's throw a lot out. And if something works, let's double down on it. If we like it working, let's double down on it. If we don't like it working, let's cut it, right? But we have to do a lot to learn what works and what doesn't. And in a space where somebody is over-identifying with the outcome and thinking it represents them, the creativity goes way down. But if somebody goes, this thing ain't me, none of this is me, you know, this is just something that I could influence, we have much more rich trial and error, because people are freer to think. And to be clear, when I'm talking about creativity, I'm not necessarily saying you're going to like my creativity. I'm not necessarily saying that it's going to be your Van Gogh. Not at all. I'm saying that it is a space that I really want to be in. And whether you like it or not is actually not that interesting to me. Because if I enjoyed being in that space, I enjoyed being in that space. I just want to be in it more. So what I'm not saying is like, we're getting together and we have a recipe for you to make a hit record. Maybe, maybe not. We just have a recipe, I think, that I've been lucky enough to feel, of just making something. and somebody else's opinion on it is very, very much, you know, not secondary. It's probably tertiary.
It's probably a little bit human nature, and certainly in society today, everybody's got an opinion. You open your phone, it's hard not to see an opinion. If you post something on social media, it's hard not to feel judged to some degree because there's a score. Like, there's literally a score to whatever you post. So what are some of the things that you do, and Toph, feel free to chime in here too, to help calm down the ego or the whatever part of your brain is like, oh, how is this going to be perceived? Or I hope they like it. How do you get to that place that you're talking about, Max, of like, I am unattached to the outcome of whether or not someone likes this? I'm doing it.
I'm usually not in that place.
Yeah.
I think I still struggle a lot with that. And I still struggle a lot with the story I have in my head around what other people think of me and what I'm doing. Reputation matters a lot to me, and I struggle with that too. So just be honest with you. I get to that place sometimes. Meditation helps a lot to sort of like be more the observer and less the actor. But still, I struggle with that a lot. We were just talking about this backstage. We're working on a track, actually the one you played a sample of that we're looking to put out soon. Just it's improvisational stuff. And so I was talking to Max about putting it out. He's like, it's pretty precious. I'm like, it is precious. You're like, it's a little hard for me to put something out there and just be like, well, this makes sense to us. Someone else might look at it and say, this just sounds like garbage. And like, how am I going to feel about that? And I'd be feel sad, you know, but on the other hand, it's like, do I want to feel great because they like it? It's like, do I want to be in there? Do I want them in control of my emotions? I struggle with that a lot. I just do. It's human. So I don't have an answer on that one besides just you kind of build up a little bit of just like playing guitar. You build up a little bit of, you know,
calluses,
yeah. You know, in some ways.
Yeah. I would like people to go, oh, this is really sweet. Pretty much every time. I'm not above and or over that. I see that everybody's bringing their own personal presence. So if their presence is very stressed, they're going to read the song differently, right? They're going to be more judgmental of it. If their presence is under stressed, you know, I doubt the Buddha would ever go, hey, this, you know, the second verse needs some help. Just be like, very nice. You know, I realize that everybody's judging it through their own historical baggage. But I think what comes to mind for me is just having the Brené Brown Square Squad of
should I know who that is?
Yes. Yeah, Brené Brown, researcher on vulnerability. Amazing.
Brené. I thought you said Brené.
Brené, yeah. And she does a wonderful thing called the Square Squad, which is like, hey, the world can't be your critic. So pick a few people who you want to be critical, who love you. They're not going to criticize you because they get joy out of it. And I think, you know, fortunately for us in the music creation process, if you invest both go, and then Matt's goes, and Anthony goes, I'm like, if they all go, it's good enough for me. You know, and if the rest of the world goes, it's like, I can still look at those guys and go, this is pretty freaking sweet, wasn't it? And they're like, you know, so I like having I think everybody's self-critical enough that you're not going to go, to everything. You know, so having that safe space of just having the validation or invalidation of people who I know aren't going to do it to hurt me. They're gonna really think critically about their criticism. Helps me a lot. My wife being one of those people.
I forgot about the Square Squad.
Yeah. Has everybody heard that term? Yeah. One inch by one inch. It's a 1-inch by 1-inch square. You write as many names as you can fit on that 1-inch by 1-inch square front and back. And those are the folks who you allow to be really, you know, judgmental to you because you seek them out. Hey, I made this decision. What do you think? And those people are usually people who are very richly loving you. So they're much likely to go, yeah, that you were a little annoying at that moment or you were a little harsh at that moment. Or they go, nah, I think you're being hard on yourself. It's nice to have that. Nice to have a group of people. It's not having nobody be your critic and not having everybody be your critic, right? It's having a select base of critics.
I love that.
I think about a couple of quick things that I'll share. So one is I've practiced yoga nidra in the past, which is just getting your body into a state where you clear clutter and focus on really what matters to you in your life at that moment. And it can change every day, every week, whatever it may be. I also think about choices, right? We talk about, with our kids, life is about choices, making good choices. And I think a lot of stuff comes down to communication, like, you know, back to all these little, these phrases that are out there, but, you know, the yes and versus the but concept, et cetera. And trying to make a choice to lift people up and try to surround yourself with people that lift you up and that you engage with people that you lift up in turn. Right. And you have to like give respect before you get respect and not engage. Like it's like a big snowball, right? If we engage with the negativity, then the negativity just gets stronger. But we, if we engage with positivity, that breeds positivity. And so I think just being human with one another, right? And enjoying the company and being forgiving of mistakes.
That's one of the things I liked about the Get In podcast.
Yeah.
Lots of play space.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah. I think that's a vibe. And for me, that's like a thing I've tried to like actively bring out of our jam sessions and into, you know, the office with Meg and Nate and the rest of the team, is just kind of, how do I create a space that's safe to throw out ideas, to be a little bit playful, to joke around. It got cut out of that video, but at the end of the power tool video, Max, you say, "That's what I've always wanted to sound like when I play the guitar, a tool." It was like that kind of like energy and fun, just like messing around. That's where good ideas tend to happen. Yeah. And I'm curious, I obviously could talk about this for another 2 hours. Don't worry. I'm not going to. But as we kind of like come to a close of this section, do you have an idea or actionable takeaway or a challenge that you want to share maybe with the folks here, like next leadership meeting they're in or next brainstorm session they're in or next time they pick up an instrument? Doesn't necessarily have to be in the boardroom.
Like the tambourine.
Like the tambourine.
I can play the tambourine. Can I come and play the tambourine?
Absolutely. Yeah, notoriously a difficult instrument to play in a room, but yes, you feel free. Jeb, do you have anything?
Yeah, I think, you know, I, when I think back to my journey as a musician and as an entrepreneur, it's sort of like building blocks a little bit of just building habits, and those habits then turn into some level of mastery. Then the mastery is applied. And then the application of the mastery is where I get into flow states. And when I'm in those flow states, when I'm just like in that space where I feel I can do no wrong, I can play no wrong notes, you know, whatever it might be. I think that, you know, look in your life and think, where do I have curiosity around something that I could potentially have creative expression? I think it's a muscle to build. And then you have to get to some level of mastery, whatever it is. And then that mastery then gives you the freedom to get into that flow state. So start small. Start as small as you need to start. It could be just drawing little pictures on post-it notes every day, whatever it might be, or going to piano and playing only the white keys, whatever it is, start small. Because I think when you bring that into your life, it infiltrates the rest of your life. You bring play into your life and you get back into the state of a child, and that childlike energy starts to infiltrate everything else you do. So just find ways to nurture it with habit, and then habit to mastery and mastery to flow.
Yeah, I would just encourage anybody, I'll encourage my daughter. I'll just use my daughter as a mental model, that it, just because you can't sell it doesn't mean it doesn't have value. You know, if she were to paint and nobody ever cared about buying her paintings, but she really enjoyed painting, that is worthwhile to me. And I think too many folks stop doing something because there is not commercial viability. They're not being applauded by the folks around them to say, you could do that for a living. And so then they don't do it at all, right? Because they can't do it for a living. So all of a sudden it becomes irrelevant to do it. And that to me is a bummer. I would prefer people were able to do it. And because it's life-giving in its own way, just not economical, you know, and economics is just a small slice of what makes life worth living. And another thing I would say is recognizing the difference between something that is scary and dangerous. Because I think when we're being intimate with one another, which is usually when we're being creative, we're being intimate, we're being vulnerable, it feels dangerous because the response of our body is one of threat. And that response was built around, we're actually in danger, right? We're going to be eaten by the lion and we're the zebra. But we're having the same psychological or mental reaction to something that is just like, I'm going to play somebody a song, right? That is scary, but it's not dangerous. And if we distinguish scary and dangerous, I think we realize a lot of things are scary, but they're not dangerous. And if we do the scary stuff, many beautiful things come out of that, because all of a sudden we're exploring new places that there's nothing really to fear. We're not in danger. It just feels scary because it's the same psychological or, you know, bodily reaction that we'd have if it was dangerous. And I think distinguishing between scary and dangerous is very difficult. But if we can do more of it, we can figure out the things that we can tinker around and the scary stuff, right? You know, and some things are dangerous, but not scary. You know, if I smoke a cigarette, that is probably dangerous, but in the moment, not scary.
But delicious.
But delicious, yeah. delicious, but doesn't
feel... Don't smoke, kids.
No. You get the idea, though. There's things that we can do that are actually dangerous that don't trigger our scare. You know, and those things are really fucking dangerous. And one of the things that I would say is staying in a job that is not life-giving. It's dangerous, but it's not scary. Oh, it's, you know, I can do this. I can do this for another 30 years. Dangerous, but not scary. So anyhow, distinguishing between the two, scary, but not dangerous, and dangerous, but not scary, I think is helpful.
I love that. And I could keep asking you guys questions all night. I'm sure you could too, Toph. Maybe we do the extended cut in the studio and bring some instruments.
Oh.
You bring your tambourine.
So I do get to play the trumpet.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, if you got Please. Chops, I no, think no, we should okay, do it.
Even if you don't, let's do it. Yeah.
I think so.
Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Well, here's I'll give you some advice James Brown gave on music. Think of every instrument as a drum. That is the best advice on playing music. Even if you're just playing one note, think of it as a drum. It's rhythm, 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 rhythm. So bring your trumpet and think of it as a drum.
Play one note
I do have one last quick question. So we've talked about music here tonight as the kind of the foundation, the backdrop of this creativity. Where are other places that you've seen people gather, men, women, men and women, et cetera, that are great gatherings to celebrate and proliferate creativity in an environment where people feel comfortable doing that to let their brains and their minds and their bodies expand?
Improv groups. I know a lot of people enjoy those. I think that's a great creative space. They terrify me. Talk about scary and dangerous. Terrifying, not dangerous, super scary for me. But I think those are great environments. I think dance is another one. I'm a terrible dancer, but you know, like those are different creative spaces like that that are safe and available to people. I think it's just, yeah, get out there and just build that creative muscle, that muscle of play, and bring it back into every other area of your life. Go back to being a kid at least once in a while. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, I'm not advocating suicide here. I'm saying, like, you know, like, what's the point of like working so hard if we can't like be playful and joyful?
Anything you'd add, Max?
Just that play is a ticket. Like, let's think about what play is. It's the first way we learn. Children learn through playing. And we later go, oh, playing is worthless and playing is, you know, for little kids. And it's like, that is the formative way of learning. We do not formatively learn by sitting at a desk and being, you know, given rote assignments. We formatively learn by tinkering with something openly without any agenda. And that's what playing is. So any space where people can play together gets increasingly difficult in adulthood, right? And that's what I like about music is I can, the same way I played with my friends with toys, I can play with my friends with instruments. I can do something funny and they might do something funny back, or they might do something funny and I can go along with it. And if you watch Toy Story, the kids playing in Toy Story are great examples. In any of the movies, there's Bonnie and there's Andy. I've watched many of them. I have a 3-year-old daughter. And they do a really nice job of showing what play looks like. In one of the movies, Andy he's really playing hard and he's got a certain storyline. His sister comes in and knocks down one of the main parts of the storyline and he's just turns it into a new storyline. He flows with it. Yeah. And that is what playing looks like. And I think we lose the capacity to do it as we get older, or we lose our comfort with it as we get older. But we all know how to do it deep in our souls, which is why it's important to find ways to get back there.
We call that a pivot.
A pivot. He totally pivots.
Jeff's here for the startup buzzwords.
Yes.
Double
yes.
click on the pivot.
Amen. Double click on the pivot.
Jeb, Max, thank you so much. Let's give it up for Jeb Banner, Max Yoder. And our fearless co-host, Christopher Toph Day.
This has been Get In, a Powder Keg production in partnership with Elevate Ventures. And we want to hear from you. If you have suggestions for our guest or segment, reach out to Matt or Nate on LinkedIn or on email. To discover top-tier tech companies outside of Silicon Valley in hubs like Indiana, check out our newsletter at powderkeg.com/newsletter. And to apply for membership to the Powder Keg Executive Community, check out powderkeg.com/premium. We'll catch you next time and next week as we continue to help the world get in. Since you just listened to this podcast, you might be thinking about starting one for your company. Lucky for you, our partners over at Casted have you covered. Casted is the first and only podcast and video marketing platform made specifically for B2B brands. I love this about them. The platform makes it possible to publish, syndicate, amplify, and measure the value of your podcast and video content. In fact, we use it for our podcast here at Powder Keg. And if you're a startup, you should listen up because Casted for Startups is definitely for you. They are offering exclusive deep discounts of up to 82% off retail price for qualifying startups. Connect with Casted at casted.us/powderkeg.